Hello, it is October 27th, 2014. You are looking live in San Francisco, California. This is episode 452 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. We just had game 5 of the World Series, but around the time that you're listening to this, I will be in the air from San Francisco to Minneapolis, and then to Kansas City. So I will be there at game 6 and 7 of the World Series. Even though the Cardinals are not in the World Series, I am at the World Series, so I am in my happy place. But baseball is actually not the only thing going on right now. I know, it is in my brain, but the rest of the world, in fact, is consumed with its own niggling matters. One of which is the NBA, which begins Tuesday, tomorrow. The NBA season actually starts tomorrow, otherwise known as Game 6 of the World Series. But also, opening day for the NBA, and which means we need to preview the NBA. I am very excited. After last year, what appeared to be kind of a transition year for the NBA, this season looks like it's going to be awesome, and I'm very excited to talk about it with today's guest, Tom Ziller. He is an NBA writer for SB Nation, author of the daily SB Nation NBA newsletter, Good Morning, It's Basketball, which you should subscribe to. I think I have it sent to 2 or 3 different email addresses to make sure that I do not miss it. Tom is great. He's going to preview the season for us because the NBA starts tomorrow. All right, Mr. Ziller, thank you for coming on with me. I'm curious, are you prepared? I feel like every year because football is going on so crazy and the World Series is always happening around the time, I always feel like, oh, shit. The NBA starts like tomorrow. are you ready? Are you prepared? Have you been starving and desperate for it to happen? I always feel like it sneaks up, but maybe that's just me.
Yeah, I've over the past few years kind of conscientiously decoupled from other sports. I've just become so ingrained in NBA life that I actually haven't watched much baseball or football this year at all. So I'm ready. I'm ready for some. Yeah. Live stories. I've been soaking up all the preview stuff that everyone else has been doing, and I'm ready for Tuesday, definitely.
Ready to get going. Are you one of the general things I've dug into this, I've been traveling enough that I've read every NBA preview magazine. It's weird. There are fewer NBA preview magazines than other professional sports. I don't know why that is, but they're hard. Actually, there are a million damn fantasy football things, but finding one or two NBA preview magazines is more difficult than one might imagine. It does seem, I actually thought last year was really fun, but it does feel like there's a culmination of 8 or 9 really kind of cool things all happening at once, leading to what I think should be a pretty fascinating year.
Yeah, it's always a fun year. I think this year is setting up just because of stuff that happened in the off season. Yeah. This is going to be such a kind of a bizarre start to the season. And then once things shake out, I think it's going to be really competitive in both conferences. I think there's a number of teams that are going to be really exciting to watch. The storylines going into the season are just phenomenal. So I think there's a lot of anticipation for it. We don't have that sort of Miami dynasty that we've been dealing with for the last few years where it's just sort of, will Miami get back to the finals? Will they win again? Because of what happened in the finals last year and then what happened afterwards in July and August, it's so wide open that I think it's going to be a really interesting season.
Now, one thing about the NBA that I think is different than the other three major professional sports, it does feel like, and when we talk about each one of these teams, if you were to preview a baseball season or a football season, you could say, okay, your favorites are the Broncos and Seahawks, and the 49ers should be good. And in baseball, it's like, okay, the A's should be good, then the Red Sox should be good, and the Cardinals should be good, and so on. But, really, we're in the World Series, and freaking Kansas City is coming out of nowhere and could actually win this whole thing, which I think is the equivalent of maybe, I don't know, Atlanta winning the NBA championship this year, that team that is above average, but you would never actually consider it. But it does feel like the NBA, because of just the structure of the sport, I think there's 5, maybe 6 teams. I want to talk about each of them that can win the championship. But it feels like that's it. Other than that, I'm trying to think of the last time a team, and I'm curious if you have an answer to that, if the last team just no one in the world even gave them the slightest possibility of winning a championship before the season, and then they did it.
I think you'd have to go back to the Pistons of 2004 that snuck up and came out of nowhere. There were, you know, the team that everyone looks to as the only championship team without a legitimate star.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, actually last year's Spurs kind of rival that, even though they weren't a surprise because they had been to the finals the year prior. But in terms of like the team that had the longest odds going into the season of winning the championship, actually doing it and doing it in rather convincing fashion, you'd have to go back to those Pistons led by Chauncey Billups, of course, Rasheed Wallace, Rip Hamilton, Ben Wallace. And I think a lot of that is that team was so defensive-minded and so good defensively that in the NBA, and I don't know how much this happens in the other sports, but definitely in the NBA, defense gets overlooked constantly at every level by journalists, by analysts, by coaches, by everyone. And so that team, you know, had the makings of an elite defensive team and had some good offensive players, Billups and Hamilton specifically. And so they really came in. I don't know that there's anyone like that this year. You could make a case for the Bulls, but they are considered a championship contender because they do have some big stars.
Okay, so I'm thinking five teams, and then maybe there's a six we can add. And I'm going to talk about each of them. Starting in the Eastern Conference, and I think you have to start with Cleveland. They are the big story of the offseason. Everyone forgets now that the Heat kind of not stunk, but were average and kind of confused for about a month. I think it was probably about a month, their first month. I think they were 500 in their first few games. Everyone was like, yeah, serves you right. And then they got good and so on. So I'm curious, do you expect those kind of growing pains for the Cavs? And also, I really find the idea of Blatt as the coach as one of the more fascinating things on this, because not only is the guy never coached the NBA, but like he's like considered like a genius in all these other kind of ways. It's fascinating to see how like the one thing that he has not done is coached in the NBA, and then this is the situation where he becomes a coach in the NBA. How do you think that's going to work out, both in the beginning and then in the long term?
Yeah, I think there's going to be some real growing pains for everyone involved. I think they'll be less than they were in Miami, though. In Miami, the situation was that LeBron was coming into a situation where he had kind of his equal playing with him in Dwayne Wade. You know, there were rivals on the court, friends off of it, and they both played similar styles. They both needed the ball in their hands a lot. So I think a lot of the growing pains there, you know, were each guy trying to find his role. It's going to be different in Cleveland in that, you know, there's definitely a point guard who's going to be bringing the ball up and running plays. Kevin Love is not a guy who's going to create off the dribble a ton. He's more of a spot-up guy or a post-up guy. And so LeBron's going to be able to freelance and play LeBron-style basketball from the get-go without any adjustments from the other guys. So I think in that sense, it'll be less of an adjustment. The coaching thing is really interesting because Blatt doesn't have NBA experience. He hasn't been an assistant in the NBA. And so he's obviously a very talented coach, very well respected. But it does strike me as interesting that, you know, the Cavs went out, they got their GM, they kept the interim GM, David Griffin. They went out and got a coach that was among the odd hires of the offseason, if you look at traditional NBA, you know, tropes and coach hiring. And it was a really weird season for coaching hires, and Blatt was the weirdest one of them all. And then, you know, they go out and they get LeBron and Kevin Love and kind of set up Blatt, you know, and there's two ways to look at it. Either the pressure could be so much that it overwhelms Blatt, or that, you know, the other side of it is that he'll have all these tools and all these weapons at his disposal, and there's no way he can fail. I think that's the side I would lean toward, is that he's such a creative guy and has a reputation for being sort of a mad scientist. He's been in high pressure situations. He coached Russia's national team as a you know, an American born guy. I mean, that's pretty high pressure. I think he can handle, you know, some columnists or some talking heads on TV. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that comes together. I do think that the adjustment period could lead to them not getting the number one seed, but by the end of the season, by the time we get to April, May, and June, I think the kinks should be worked out, and I'm excited to see what they come up with.
Yeah, say what you will about Dan Gilbert, but he will not put you in the gulag if you fail. So, who knows? Who knows? Maybe he has a secret Cleveland or Detroit, I guess, gulag.
I wonder if he waters shirtless.
Yeah, you know what? There's only one way to find out. next time we're in a room. So the team that you you talked about them maybe not getting number one seed. It seems like the team that's most likely, if it's not the Cavs, and I agree with you that this team will probably end up with the number one seed, are the Bulls. You know, I'm a Knicks fan, but I still feel like Carmelo would have been so cool on this team. Like, I would have been a kind of a fascinating experiment. But certainly bringing in Gasol and getting Rose back, do they, we know the defense is going to be good. They don't have Boozer, so they're not as ugly to look at anymore. this seems to me, if Rose is healthy and Noah can play at the level he did last year and Gasol can bring what he can, this seems to me like maybe the best of these Bulls teams.
Yeah, no, I agree, absolutely. It all depends on Rose, and I think that's why it was unfortunate that Melo didn't choose Chicago, because this would have been a legitimate superpower to rival the Cavaliers. I still think they're pretty close, but now it depends on Rose. I think if they had Melo, they could get away with Rose not being the old Derrick Rose, the MVP Derrick Rose, and still challenge Cleveland for supremacy. At this point, they do need Derrick Rose to be himself, because otherwise the offense, you know, as we saw last year without D Rose, the offense can be a struggle for that team. Joakim Noah is a good playmaker. He's not a big time scorer. Taj Gibson's not a big scorer. Pau Gasol is an interesting addition here. In addition to, Nikola Mirotic, those guys can score. Pau had a really great season last year. His one sort of weakness at this point is defense. And when you're playing with Joakim Noah or Taj Gibson, that's not going to be as much of a concern. When you're playing for a Tibbs team, that's not going to be as much of a concern, because the other guys on the court are going to be able to defend. Mirotic is going to be, you know, I think he's an early favorite for Rookie of the Year. I think if he gets the minutes, and it looks like he will, he's going to put up huge numbers, and he's going to cause a ton of matchup problems, even for the Cavaliers. So I'm excited. The one reason, above all, that I think Chicago is the favorite for the number one seed in the East is that Thibodeau is a maniac who will play these guys as many minutes as he... I mean, Powell's had it easy in L.A. He's, you know, played 30, 32 minutes a game. If worst comes to worst, if Taj or Noah gets injured and Powell has to start or play heavy minutes, I mean, he's going to be playing like 36, 38 minutes a game, because that's how Tibbs rolls. So I think when you look at the number one seed, I think Chicago's the favorite. In terms of who's the best team in the East, you know, I think it comes down to how healthy and how explosive Derrick Rose is.
Is there anybody else in the East that is worth that, maybe not a championship contender, or at least close? Like, is it a foregone conclusion that we're going to see Bulls, Cavs in the Eastern Conference Finals? Who's a team that could sneak in there?
You know, the Wizards are an interesting team if everything breaks right for them. You know, they've already had something break wrong with Bradley Beal, mm-hmm. Getting injured. And so they need Nene to be healthy. They need Marcin Gortat to be as good as he was through stretches last year. They need Paul Pierce to be good and give them that edge. They need John Wall to take it up another level. But I think they're poised to potentially be that team. Toronto is a team that I don't know how much to believe in, because it seems like everyone on that team had their best season last year. And with a team that's filled with veterans like Amir Johnson, Kyle Lowry, even at this point, DeMar DeRozan's a veteran. With a team filled with veterans that all have their best season in 1 year, it's kind of hard to believe that they'll either do it again or that they'll improve upon that. So I'm shaky on that team. And then the Heat is the other team. There's something to be said for Dwayne Wade with vengeance on his mind. And I think that's going to be interesting to see how hard they go during the regular season to try to get home court advantage in the first round, and then to see if they do match up against Cleveland in the playoffs. I mean, Bosch versus Love and then Wade versus LeBron is just going to be incredible to watch. So I think it bears paying attention to those teams in addition.
Okay, going over to the Western Conference, it feels like there's obviously there's the quality at the of the Western Conference is across the board a lot better. And I was listening to the Starters podcast, and they or I guess the show. I guess it's a show now that I listen to as a podcast. But they were talking about how it looks like it's going to be very difficult for even another team to break into those eight playoff teams, even if they're good in a lot of ways. But it does feel like there's three, maybe four championship contenders. And the biggest question, I think, starting off the season, with Durant out for Oklahoma City, does that essentially cost them any shot at the number one seed kind of right there, or how much can they kind of hang in while he's gone?
I think they can hang in. Depends on how much this injury nags or how much it takes from him. You know, best case scenario, he's back in early December. It seems like everyone sort of expects that he'll be back around Christmas, but we've seen this particular injury, the Jones fracture, in the past, really take guys out for quite a while. And so if he's not back until January, late January, you know, around MLK Day, I think it's a problem for OKC, because I love Russell Westbrook. Can't wait to see what he does with the reins and with free range to freelance all over the place. But I think when you lose a guy like that, and we have to remember that OKC wasn't the number one seed last year with Durant for all season. So the Spurs have been that good during the regular season, despite resting guys, despite dealing with injuries. The Spurs are always the favorite for the number one seed, I think. And so I'm not sure it totally matters either for the Thunder to get home court. They do have a strong home court advantage in OKC, but if Durant's back and clicking and even a little rested from his time off due to injury, you know, by the time the playoffs rolls around, I think they can still make a run to the finals. If he gets back and you know, Westbrook is healthy, Ibaka's healthy, they don't have one of those big playoff injuries that they seem to draw.
Is there a sense with Oklahoma City that this is, you know, with Durant's pending free agency and kind of like them kind of taking, I mean, it's hard to say, but they've obviously had great seasons, but they've taken some steps back since they were a game up on Miami in the playoffs and really felt like they were kind of the future a little bit. Is there a sense that this is kind of the crescendo season? Either they have to do it this year, or maybe they won't do it at all?
You know, I don't know how nervous the people in OKC are. I know that I would be nervous if I was in their situation, because, you know, with everything is uncertain going into 2016, there's, you know, little chance that Durant's going to sign an extension because he can get more money by becoming a free agent. Even if he wants to stay in OKC, it makes more sense to become a free agent in 2016 and sign that contract. The salary cap is exploding that year. DC, you know, the Wizards are a rising team who's going to have plenty of money to spend in 2016, potentially bring him and one of his other buddies over, who's a free agent that year. And of course, he's, you know, he's from DC. He loves the district. There's so much uncertain that I would be nervous. And I think that was really the unfortunate thing of this injury, is that this is such a crucial year for the Thunder, and they started with a Durant injury that could potentially, you know, have ramifications for the entire season. I mean, you're getting down to crunch time now. You've got two seasons with Durant under contract, and one of them is coming up, and the next one, and we saw what happened to Cleveland in 09, in 2010, that final season before he left. I think things could get dicey if things go upside down this year.
When it comes to San Antonio, you know, the thing that I thought was so cool about their finals was, like, they were so good and so fun to watch, and just so did everything so well that, like, the idea, like, people didn't even really get into the fact that LeBron didn't win his third title. They were just like, wow, the Spurs are so cool. That was so fun. That was so enjoyable to watch. Are they better this year? Is it a matter of Leonard stepping up, or what's, are they a better team, or do they just kind of keep rolling?
Yeah, I think they're not better necessarily. They didn't really add a whole lot. If anything, most of their team is in their 30s. That's usually not good. When you roll on Tim Duncan, this is probably his final season. Maybe he'll stick around if he has another strong season. And that's the thing about Tim Duncan, is he hasn't just sort of held on at the end of his career. He's like a legitimate all NBA team guy still, a legitimate candidate for those awards, a legitimate all-star. And so he's hanging on. you know, Tony Parker is a quick guard who's now, you know, well into his 30s, which is usually trouble. Ginobili seems to go back and forth between being acceptable and unacceptable on the court. And then, you know, Kawhi, the interesting thing about Kawhi is that his real strengths are defensively, especially, you know, with his defensive intensity and his length, and then hitting threes. He doesn't have a whole lot else to his game necessarily, and it's not clear that he's, you know, being pushed to add that other stuff. So he's a definite star in the making, but his star is more of the Sean Marion type than the traditional small forwards that we think of. So I don't know how much there is for him to grow unless he starts adding, you know, more ball handling to his game, which I don't necessarily think the Spurs want at this point. You know, Boris Diaw is always a dice roll. He was in great shape last year and at the peak of his powers, I think, over the playoffs, and you never know which Boris Diaw. I mean, he got cut from the worst team in history a few years ago. So, you know, betting on him, I'm a little surprised that they gave him such a fat contract, no pun intended. But, you know, I believe they have weight clauses in there. So we'll see, you know, what happens with that. The rest of the team, you know, Patty Mills is out for a while. The point guard spot could be a little dicey. You know, the Spurs are going to be the popular pick to make the finals out of the West, but I could, you know, legitimately see them falling off. They famously have that curse of never winning back-to-back titles. That's why some people foolishly consider them not a dynasty, because they never do it back-to-back. I could see a bit of a letdown here. They don't really have any sort of vengeance on their mind like they did last year. You know, the guys are getting old. It'll be interesting to see. And of course they're fun now. They're fun to watch. So I think everyone will still be paying attention to them. But you know, you could definitely see them flipping back a little bit.
And I think the third team in the Western Conference that you look at as a contender are the Clippers. And it's funny because, you know, they obviously the Sterling stuff last year and all with that, there seems to be now that we have a different person, we have a different guy signing the checks, as if that makes that much difference on a day-to-day for them. Do you think that makes a difference? Are they better this year? What do they need?
Yeah, I don't know how much of a difference it makes for the players. I think for the rest of the staff there, it's probably like a godsend that there's a different guy signing the checks. I think, you know, last year they had some injury issues. Chris Paul was out for a while. Chris Paul's always kind of an injury risk due to the way he plays and his history of problems. You know, I'm not a huge fan of what they did in the offseason. They brought in Spencer Hawes, who I have a long history with here in Sacramento. I think he's a decent addition. I just don't know that they have, you know, they don't really have a small forward that they can depend on to make things happen. Their defense, it really relies on both Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan. You know, with J.J. Redick and Jamal Crawford at the two-guard spot, they don't have a lot of defense there. Blake is an all-right defender, but he's definitely not a stopper. So I worry about their defense a little bit. The thing they have going for them is they have, you know, the best on-court coach in the business in Chris Paul, and then they have one of the best coaches in the business in Doc Rivers, plus all the emotions of new ownership, of getting rid of Sterling. I think that's gonna do well for them. They're one of the few teams with two legitimate MVP candidates in Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, and so that counts for a lot. I think they'll have a really great season. I don't know if I see them getting all the way to the finals, but I think they're certainly one of the contenders in the West to do so.
Okay, I guess the other teams that you're looking at there, who would you think the biggest one? There's some would say Golden State. Some would say even Houston. Who is it? Golden State. I'm curious about Kerr. I'm not sure. Everyone seemed there seemed to be this kind of weird bidding war for Steve Kerr, who I like, but you know, the assumption was that he was this obvious lockdown great coach. What do you think of Golden State and the rest of the Western Conference?
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what Golden State does, especially after the preseason. They played a totally different style of offense. Mm-hmm. Mark Jackson was very conservative offensively. He let Clay and Steph Curry shoot a lot, but he basically had Andrew Bogut removed from the offense, which is crazy because Andrew Bogut is a really good playmaking center, one of the best passers of his generation at the center spot. Traditionally a decent post-up player as well. And so I think Kerr is going to get Bogut more involved, Iguodala more involved, and run less straight pick and roll and do some more interesting motion offense type things. He doesn't seem to be implementing any version of the triangle. There'll just be some principles of the triangle there. But I think it's going to be interesting. The other thing that gets overlooked with Golden State is they added Alvin Gentry as the sort of the associate head coach or the coach's babysitter, I like to call that position. And Alvin Gentry has run some of the most fun offenses in the league. He was an assistant for Mike D'Antoni for a while in Phoenix, and last year in L.A. for Doc. And I think I can't wait to see, you know, what the offense looks like in the regular season. Their defense has been spectacular. When you have Iguodala and Bogut anchoring your defense, you're in good shape. And so I'm really excited to see what the Warriors do. I think it's up to Kerr to really open the doors to that offense and get them going. You know, Dallas is a really interesting team. I don't know that they are championship material, but they were the toughest team for the Spurs to beat last year. They took the Spurs to 7 in the first round, which I think a lot of us forget. And they got a lot better in the offseason. They added Chandler Parsons. They got Tyson Chandler back. Their depth is spectacular around Dirk Nowitzki. They don't really have that second star. I don't know that Parsons is really an all-star type player, but just like they did in 2011, they have that one superstar in Dirk who's playing as well as he ever has. And then they have just a phenomenal supporting cast. When you have a coach like Rick Carlisle, he's going to get really creative on how he uses all those guards that he has and how he works the defense around Tyson Chandler. So I think they're an interesting team that can maybe bump off one of these contenders early in the playoffs and upset the apple cart. Houston, they had such an awful offseason that and they kept Kevin McHale, which is just mind-boggling to me. If you wanted that team to take the next step, you kind of had to look at the coach, I think, at that point, and they didn't. They kept them around for a year, and then they lost Chandler Parsons. They struck out. They had to trade Omer Asik and Jeremy Lin. They just had such an awful offseason. I think they're a worse team than they were last year, and they got ejected in the first round. So I don't see them necessarily making noise without a big trade.
Okay, well, this is enough talk of happy, successful teams in the NBA. Let's talk about sad ones. Let's talk about our teams. I am a Knicks fan. I have to say, whatever your thoughts about Phil Jackson, you know, I my favorite part about that Phil Jackson Charlie Rosen piece was actually the lead, because it was like the General Patton looked over his troops on the field, like basically this wonderful and this incredible leader, this monument among men, stood back and surveyed Tim Hardaway Jr. and dubbed him so on. Which I thought was really great. But I still kind of, like, as someone that's been watching, you know, the Knicks be this weird, secretive, oddball, strange, weirdo organization, it was nice to see at least something a little bit honest, even if in that Phil Jackson sort of honest. To me, I feel like they just can't help but be a little bit better than last year, just because they seem to have some sort of plan in place. But are they a playoff team? Do they want to be a playoff team? Are they moving in the right direction?
Yeah, I think they're a playoff team just because they're in the East, and the East is so shallow. You know, they'll have a dogfight down there, I think, with teams like the Pacers and the Hawks, and maybe even the Bucks will jump up and get into that conversation. So I think they're a playoff contender for sure. I think they basically were until April last year just because the East was so bad, even though the Knicks were so awful last year compared to the previous season. They were still, you know, in the mix going into the final weeks of the season. And so I think that's always a nice thing to have when the bar of being successful is so low. And I think they'll be better because their offense will be unlocked a little bit. Jose Calderon is a really good offensive point guard. I think he'll do some interesting things. It doesn't look like Melo's going to play power forward, which is a bit unfortunate. I hope that he does more because he's a really good power forward. He's a fine small forward, but I think for that team to be most successful, he's really got to be playing the power forward position. the problem with the Knicks and what's going to hold them back for the foreseeable future is their defense. You know, Derek Fisher is a defensive-minded guy. Phil Jackson, of course, always preached defense and will continue to do so. They have no defenders other than Iman Shumpert on that team whatsoever. Calderon is a sieve. Melo is not a great defender. He can play defense, but he requires so much energy on offense that he just, you know, he can't, you know, be a good defender full time. They traded Tyson Chandler. You basically cannot play Bargnani and Stoudemire together without giving up a basket every single time down the floor. And so it's just going to be a mess defensively. I don't know what Fisher's going to do to try to fix that. And maybe they won't even try this year. You know, the Mavericks got into the playoffs in the hardcore West last year with a horrible defense and a really good offense. So maybe that's the blueprint for the Knicks in the immediate term. I think long term they need to find a defensive center, like, you know, a half dozen other or dozen other teams.
Right.
Everyone wants a defensive-minded center. And I think they need to find a long-term solution at point guard as well. They need to figure out what to do with J.R. Smith. I don't think he really fits into the whole Phil Jackson, Derek Fisher team. And so if they can find a buyer for him, I think that would be good. Otherwise, I think Melo, when he signed the contract, sort of accepted that at least one season was going to be a wash. And, you know, hope that things, you know, start to turn around and then next offseason things get kind of out of here.
I know this is a loaded question. I'm sure you love getting asked, but how do you feel about the Kings this year?
Yeah, it's tough. and I think my official prediction has been like 41 wins, which is insanely optimistic by even Sacramento fan standards. But I think the team is so desperate to get the stink of the Maloofs off that another big trade will be coming at some point. I don't know who it'll be. I don't know when it'll be, but I just have a feeling that the team, new owners, the new management, the general manager, Pete D'Alessandro, the coach, Michael Malone, they just want to give the fans something to cheer for other than off-the-court stuff, other than arena stuff or Mayor KJ. I think they want to give, you know, the fans a good product on the court. The only way to do that at this point is to turn a lot of these young assets like Ben McLemore, Nick Stauskas, some draft picks into another legitimate star to play with DeMarcus Cousins. I don't know, you know, the team seems to be sort of wedded to the idea of keeping Rudy Gay long-term to play next to Cousins. It really worked well last year. I'm of the mind that you sell high and you don't, like, lock in long-term on a guy who played the best basketball of his career for 50 games. But they seem to be wedded to the idea that Gay works really well alongside Cousins. They made some changes at the point guard spot, letting Isaiah Thomas go, which didn't sit well with a lot of fans, but I think, you know, keeps the team pretty flexible in terms of the roster. I think this team is just like tailor-made for at least one big trade, if not a couple of trades. So I think the team that we see now, which is pretty disappointing, is not going to be the team we see in, you know, February. And so I don't think it's a playoff team by any stretch. I don't think anything less than, you know, 48, 49, 50 wins gets you the playoffs in the West. But I do think the team is desperate enough to make a big, big splash that things will change before the season's over.
All right. And lastly, let's talk about a non-playoff team that will make you happy to talk about. Let's talk about the Lakers and to talk about Kobe. It is really strange. It's, you know, I don't know if there's a parallel kind of in NBA history of a superstar at this level. You know, the Henry Abbott piece is the big talk of everybody now, and whatever your thoughts on it. I mean, I think in general, like, I think people are, I find that people are reacting more emotionally to that piece than necessarily rationally. And the idea that, okay, maybe, you know, maybe there's a liner here that maybe there's not enough respect shown to Kobe, but the idea that the Lakers are worse because Kobe is making so much money and is the center of everything. I mean, look at the team. I mean, it's
right.
It's difficult to argue in a lot of ways. It's just weird to think that Kobe's career is going to kind of end up this way.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things that get conflated in this discussion about Kobe and who's ruining the Lakers and why the Lakers are so bad. I mean, it's the absolute obvious fact that, you know, Kobe making $24 million a year has hamstrung this team and made it very difficult for them to go out and get a solid core. The reason that they couldn't get Melo or LeBron or anyone in the off season is because they don't have a team. Like, who is going to go play with nobody? You know, LeBron went to Cleveland because they had Kyrie Irving and at the time Andrew Wiggins, Anthony Bennett, Tristan Thompson. They had a team there, and of course they flipped a couple of those guys for Kevin Love. And of course it was his hometown. Melo stayed with the Knicks in part because of money, but you know, the Knicks are a better team than the Lakers. If you take Melo and put him on the Lakers, or if you take him off of both teams, the Knicks are going to be better than the Lakers. There's just no one there, and the reason that is because they spend so much money on Kobe. That's just, you know, an obvious fact. The other question that I think gets lost in it is does Kobe have some sort of leeway? Is it okay that the Lakers are terrible now because they're paying Kobe so much money when Kobe gave them, you know, five rings, when he was, you know, the biggest factor in two of those and a co-star for the other three? Does he deserve this money as sort of a thank you for all the money that he made the Buss family over the years? Which I think the answer to that is yes. I think it doesn't hurt Kobe's legacy in any way that he's going out like this, given, you know, what he's done in his career. I think those get mixed up. So you have, you know, a lot of, especially Lakers fans or Kobe fans in particular, who say that, you know, it's Kobe's fault. Look at what he's done. He has five rings. He's been great his entire career. And then you have people who are saying, well, what have you done for me lately? This is tarnishing his legacy and the Laker of the legacies, or in the legacy of the Lakers. He should have been like Tim Duncan, like Kevin Garnett, like Dirk Nowitzki, and taken a pay cut for the betterment of his franchise. I tend to side with Kobe on this. It's not his fault that the Buss family, you know, hadn't wanted to spend over the luxury tax the last few years or wanted to minimize their luxury tax payments. It's not his fault that he was only able to make, you know, 20, 25 million those years when he was worth a lot more. He's getting his pay now. Even though it's more than he's worth now, he's sort of catching up on that. He's not going to take less so that someone else can make more money off of him. And I agree with him on that. So I think it's a whole host of issues, and that's what makes the Lakers so interesting, is that there are all these factors that go into it. And Kobe is, you know, one of the most outspoken guys when it comes to, you know, the profitability of owning an NBA franchise. And the lumps that the players have taken over the years. You know, he was one of the, I think, four or five guys that voted against the lockout deal in 1999 because he knew it would screw him over the next, you know, 15 years by capping his salary. And, you know, he was right. He's been right all along.
All right, I have one last thing I want to ask before, and then we'll wrap up, and then we'll wrap up this and go do some trivia. But one, you know, it's funny. There was the move about all this talk about tanking and all this talk about and they tried to make the move to change the draft odds. They didn't. And it's weird because, you know, there seems to, in what the 76ers are doing, but it feels like there's an obsession with getting the number one pick. Like, the number one pick will change your life and it will change your future and change in a lot of ways. But it's weird because the same team actually has the number one draft picks from the last two seasons, and nobody cares about that team at all. There's even slightly interested in them in a lot of ways. I'm talking about, of course, about the Timberwolves. It seems to me just strange that there's all this obsession with getting number one picks, and there's a team that has the last two, and everyone thinks they're going to be horrible.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think the issue is that it's not so much the result. So the result is, you know, either getting the number one pick or number two or number three, and under lottery reform, maybe go down to seven, which is kind of a catastrophe if you're the worst team in the league. I think it's about the process. So I think it's people complaining about the Sixers doing this so nakedly. So even if, I mean, the Sixers didn't get the number one pick last year, they didn't even get the number two pick. And they weren't even the worst team in the league, which is the thing that's lost on most people. I think it's the idea that they are, you know, functionally trying to lose and making no bones about it. They're not even hiding the fact that they're trying to lose. And I think that's what gets people, not necessarily the result. And I think that's why maybe lottery reform isn't as interesting to the casual fan as the whole tanking discussion is. Because it's the process. It's the idea that a team that is charging people to come watch them play, that is in a competitive league, is willing to completely tank for up to 3 years, maybe, definitely 2 years based on what they're bringing into this season. Maybe 3 years, maybe 4 years. Just the idea of that, I think, is so fundamentally un-American and against everything we believe in sports that I think that's what's captured the imagination of so many writers and fans.
It remains one of my favorite things. I feel like this is almost underrated in the annals of Knicks fans suffering, of which, you know, listen, I'm a relatively recent, in the last 15 years, convert to the Knicks anyway, so I can't really claim too much suffering other than that. Though I became a Knicks fan when I moved to New York in 2000 because I didn't grow up with an NBA team, and I thought, well, I mean, they've made the playoffs every year for so long, they're going to be good, this will be a fun decade, and then that happened. But I love the idea that, like, last year they had two teams. Like, one team was definitely taken. The other, and Boston, you know, was hardly stacking the roster either, and still stunk, and still didn't make the playoffs. I like that it kind of, like, actually in their division they even had that and still can do it, which is very nice. All right, well, thank you, Tom. I'm very excited about the season, and I'm excited to follow you all season. Of course, you know, and everyone can read your daily news. It's Good Morning, It's Basketball. That's the daily newsletter, correct?
Yes.
Okay, they can just go to SB Nation and sign up for that. It is a warm, happy, piping, warm, happy thing that shows up in your email box every day, and I really enjoy it, and Tom is great. So, Tom, thank you for coming on. Stick around, we'll do some trivia after we finish this up, but seriously, thanks, and enjoy the season. And honestly, it's funny. One of the things I love, I wrote a column about this for Sports on Earth about the Royals before the postseason started, about how I find myself always kind of rooting for the Royals a little bit because there are so many good writers that write about the Royals, from Rob Dyer, Randy Cicerelli, and Joe Posnanski. I find myself always checking how the Kings are doing in the standings because of you, because when it happens, I will be so happy for you. And it's going to happen, right? Eventually they're going to break through, right?
Yeah, when we both have grandkids and we're sitting in rocking chairs and doing a very long podcast on that, you'll check the standings. We'll be just fine.
Yeah, by that age, we'll call it a podcast, but we'll really just be us talking to lamps. But but yeah. So anyway, Tom, thank you very much. I appreciate it. This was really fun. Thanks for coming on with me.
All right, thanks, Will.
Okay, this has been the Willis Experience. Oh, sorry. Follow Tom Ziller on Twitter at Team Ziller, TEAMZILLER, and look for his work on SB Nation and sign up for his daily NBA newsletter. Good Morning, It's Basketball. Subscribe to that. It's very good. This has been the Willis Experience podcast. The music is by the Sun Dogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We'll be back. I'm going on vacation right after the World Series. We're going to do one more podcast before the season ends with Matt Norlander, who's going to preview the college basketball season for us. So we're going to do that one, and then I'm going on vacation. I'm going to Hawaii, where there are I'll probably just watch sports really early in the morning and then figure out what I'll do with my day the rest of the day. Anyway, have a great week. I'll talk to you and Matt Norlander.